Back in the spring of 2006, Pam Gilbert was having a typical weekend at her home in suburban Virginia.
It was a Sunday afternoon. I was out doing some yard work with my husband. Some neighbors stopped by. We were talking, and I felt like somebody was pulling me to the right, like they had a rope tied around my shoulders and were pulling me. And I just felt a little off balance. And I asked them if I was leaning, and we, you know, they asked me, you know, had I been drinking? And we just all just thought it was funny because I was leaning to the right.
Pam, who is in her mid-40s at the time, doesn't think too much of it, but the symptoms don't let up.
And within a couple of days, I wasn't able to walk. I had severe vertigo. I was vomiting. And it got so bad that my husband took me to the emergency room.
Had you ever experienced anything like this before?
Never had a dizzy spell. It was just so out of the ordinary, we didn't know what was going on.
At the ER, the doctors don't spot anything out of the ordinary. They diagnose Pam with an ear infection and send her home. But a few more weeks pass, and the dizziness is still there.
I could not drive a car. I wouldn't have been able to pass a sobriety test. I was just really unsteady. Felt like I was in a fun house, but not so fun.
The days go by, and soon Pam figures out a way to treat herself. She simply stops moving her head, like she won't turn it from side to side to look at something. Instead, she rotates her whole body.
And so I was moving much like a robot would.
And that robot movement, though a bit bizarre, pretty much settles everything down. The vertigo subsides, and she's able to get back to her regular life. Pam has two kids, she's involved with Girl Scouts and the Neighborhood Association. Whatever this spell was, it seems to have passed, as long as she keeps her head locked in position. But as time passes, Pam notices something strange starting to happen with her ears. Her hearing becomes extremely acute, extremely sensitive. She starts picking up all these sounds she had never noticed before.
One day, I was upstairs in my bedroom. We live in a two-story house, and we have a basement. And I looked at my husband and I said, as some wives will do, "Honey, the faucet in the bathroom is dripping. Can you go turn it off?" And since his side of the bed is closer to the bathroom, he assumed I meant the sink in our bathroom. But what I could hear was it was the sink in the basement had a dripping faucet, and I asked him to go turn it off, and he was like, "You can't possibly hear that." And sure enough, he went downstairs and it was dripping.
It was as if Pam had suddenly developed this superpower.
It's kind of like, you know, how birds and bees can see different colors because they just have that ability. I could hear sounds that other people couldn't hear.
All these normally muted noises of daily life start catching her attention.
I could hear when the kids would roll over in bed, even though they were two doors away. My door was closed and their door was closed.
She could hear every mouse scurrying through the wall.
If there was a leaf on the roof, I heard it.
Pam's hearing begins to take over her life. These noises start dominating her consciousness.
And then I noticed the sounds began to hurt. And it became a psychological fear of sound because I could hear everything.
The telephone became unusable because holding the handset up to her ear was like having a megaphone blasted 2 inches from your head. She couldn't go inside her kid's school because teenager screams and the echoes off the linoleum were like daggers. So she decided to go back to the doctors.
I was seeing all the ear specialists and I went to a neurologist who, you know, told me, I hate to say this, but he said, "You're just a bored housewife looking for attention. Here's a handful of pills."
Pam knew there was something more serious going on. During the next few months, the external sounds she heard so clearly were joined by internal sounds, by noises coming from inside her own body.
I had this booming heartbeat in my ears. I had this tinnitus, this ringing in the ears, a constant note, just like a blaring horn in my head. Those sounds were unshakable. There wasn't any way to turn them down. They never went away. I could hear the bones in my neck cracking, you know, just kind of like sandpaper. At one point, I could hear my eyes move.
Yes, you heard that correctly, her eyeballs. When Pam reads a book, the tinnitus in her ears starts correlating with her eye movement across the page.
So it would be squealing till I got to the end of the line. And when I moved my eyes to the beginning of the next line, it was a different kind of squeal. Just as painful, just as loud, just a different note. There were days where I thought, my brain was going to be vibrated into oatmeal. There were just times where you just couldn't think straight because of the noise going on internally.
I asked Pam if she could describe the sounds in her head, what it was like to live with this.
Yeah.
She asked me to follow her to the garage. We hop into the Honda.
So this is what it's like. You ready? That's what it's like 24/7. There's no volume control, and there's no way to turn it off.
Ricky Martin, car speakers, top volume. This is not a good way to go through life. Like a bullet to your brain. Upside, inside out. Living la vida loca. By this point, Pam is basically living as a hermit. She's avoiding all public settings, turning down dinner invitations, and not going on Girl Scout trips. She also begins to develop a system of signs to communicate with her husband and kids, who know there is something going on, obviously, but don't fully understand the extent to which she's suffering.
When I was in the depths of, I'm going crazy, and this isn't anything that talk therapy is going to help with, there's not a pill I can take, I'm the bad kind of crazy. I can hear things that other people can't, so I'm really deeply disturbed. And I have to hide this from everyone.
At this point, the only moments of relief came in the evening when she would put on talk radio.
So I would turn on NPR. All Things Considered was music to my ears because it was
All Things Considered.
So
and I'm Robert C.
beautifully matched to the sounds going on in my head. It would mask all those sounds. And I was able to sleep. So I don't know if you'll want to put this on the radio, but I used NPR to fall asleep.
You know, a lot of people find public radio boring enough to put you to sleep.
It's not boring. It was just this tone that was calming and soothing, and it wasn't syncopated. It was smooth.
We are definitely going to replay this story during our next pledge drive. But anyways, in 2008, so 2 years into this disorder, Pam finds herself back at the doctor's office, but not for her hearing issue.
I don't know, maybe I had a sore throat or something. And I went to see my family doctor, and he just took me by my arms. And this is the family doctor. And he held me and he got up in my face and said, there's something very, very wrong with you. And we have to find out what it is because these medications may hide the next symptom that leads to your diagnosis.
he sends her to get more tests at yet another ear, nose, and throat doctor, who takes a look at her and says,
"Wow, you got some really strange symptoms. I've never even seen any of this before, but I'm going to send you to Johns Hopkins. These guys are really good, and they'll be able to figure out what's wrong with you."
I'm Lloyd Minor, and I'm Dean of Medicine at Stanford University.
And you spent some time in Baltimore, right, at Johns Hopkins?
I did. I spent 19 years at Johns Hopkins.
Minor is also an ear, nose, and throat doctor, but his specialty is the inner ear and the balance system, also called the vestibular system.
Our inner ear, our vestibular system, is like our gyroscope. It tells our brain how our head is moving, and we use it all the time. It's our inner ear, it's our balance vestibular system, that enables us to drive a car along a bumpy road. Because when you're driving a car or when you're running, your head's bouncing up and down, but you don't have any trouble looking at road signs, at other things in front of you. And the reason you don't is that for every head movement, that head movement's being detected by your inner ear, and your eyes are moving in a way that compensates for the head movement.
So this balance system is at the heart of how we move through the world, how our senses, like sight and hearing, work together to feed the brain information about spatially where we are. Dr. Minor is an expert in this relationship, and in the spring of 1995, a patient comes in with a vestibular system problem.
And I saw a gentleman in his mid-50s who came in with kind of a bizarre complaint. He said that when he sang in the shower, he saw things moving. And he was very specific about the way in which they moved. And he said, you know, they're moving as if they're moving about a clock face.
The shampoo bottle, the loofah, they almost rotate when he starts singing.
And in fact, he said, look, I can show you if you just, you know, give me something where I can put a loud noise in my my right ear. I can show you because when I'm looking, you know, at myself in loud noises, I see my eyes move.
So Minor gets a piece of equipment, makes a tone in the patient's right ear, and he sees the guy's eyes jump.
They weren't random eye movements. They were very tightly timed and linked to the sound, and they were always in the same direction.
And this fact that they jumped the same way each time turned out to be a huge clue for Minor. Our vestibular system is composed of three tiny little fluid-filled canals. They're so small, all three of them would fit on top of a dime, and they're tucked inside the inner ear. Minor suspected that the canals must somehow be involved with the way this guy's eyes were moving, and he had this suspicion because of, well, pigeons.
Pigeons became involved because the way people over a century ago discovered that the inner ear had a role in control of eye movements and in balance. A lot of those original studies were done in pigeons.
Researchers, including an Italian biologist named Pietro Tullio, would, I don't know, strap down these birds and remove the bone over one of the canals.
And then they would push on the membranous portion of the canal, the fluid-filled portion of the canal, and they would observe that the pigeon's eyes, and oftentimes its head, moved in the plane of that canal.
Just like his patient, the guy who sings in the shower, the eyes of the pigeon would jolt the same way.
And therefore, it seemed to me, there had to be a similar problem in these patients. Somehow, the bone was likely to be missing over that top balance canal.
Minor had made the discovery. He figured out that this tiny layer of bone, for whatever reason, isn't there in patients with this condition, which he dubs superior semicircular canal dehiscence, dehiscence being the word for rupture or opening. And because there is now this opening, sound waves, which usually travel through the middle ear and then into the inner ear without disrupting these canals, instead, the waves now kind of rumble right through them.
The balance canal, the top balance canal, becomes a sound receptor.
It's almost like an escape route. This sound energy is supposed to be moving from A to B, and then it just leaks.
That's right. Supposed to be moving from A to B, but then all of a sudden C opens up. And now it can move from A to B, and it can move from A to C.
That's what explains why these patients have heightened sensitivity to external sounds, and also the noises inside the body, like the muscles that move our eyeballs. It's like this seal that's supposed to be in place to protect us from these noises has a hole torn through it.
We can think of the vestibular system ordinarily as being a black box that we never have to think about. It's always there. It's doing its job. And then when there's this opening, or when there's another problem with the way the vestibular system works, then all of a sudden, you know, everything falls apart.
I just remember Dr. Miner saying, you have this condition, and us just looking at each other like, holy cow, I'm not crazy.
Just knowing there was something physically wrong was a huge relief to Pam Gilbert and her husband. It meant the problem was in her head, but it wasn't in her head. Dr. Miner explained the treatment he helped pioneer, how he could go in through her skull, lift up her brain, and get access to the bone protecting her canal, where he could then plug up this 2-millimeter hole.
We leave Johns Hopkins, we come home, and I'm like, did he say brain surgery?
It is a serious surgery. There's the chance hearing in her right ear could be permanently lost. There's a small chance for facial paralysis. And like every time you open up the skull, something unexpected could happen. But Pam wasn't going to be the first to get the surgery. And overall, it's considered a good option for people with severe symptoms. Pam, though, doesn't see it this way. She's just not thinking logically anymore.
My ability at that point to take in complex information, process it, make a thoughtful, reasoned surgical decision is just ludicrous. I'm an animal at this point. I can't tie my shoes and have a conversation at the same time. So I find out I need this surgery, and in my mind, I've converted that to a death sentence.
She's totally exhausted, totally worn down after years of this cacophony in her head. And rather than opt for the surgery, she makes a deal with herself, a deal she now realizes was totally irrational.
I think, well, my daughter's in high school now. I can live like this for 4 more years, and then I'll just be gone. It was magical thinking, delusional thinking. I would just disappear. Never said the word suicide, but I was just going to be gone. Because once my kids were through high school, I will have done my duty. And I would just be gone.
And then September of her daughter's freshman year arrives, and Pam notices a new symptom, something called autophony.
So autophony is this symptom where you can hear your own voice. And well, everyone can hear their own voice. But with this, you hear your voice as loud as you can think of, like a rock concert. That's what your voice becomes. Only it's a rock concert of fingernails on a chalkboard.
Speaking in anything above a whisper is like a stick of dynamite going off in her head.
Certain letters make certain vibrations. I couldn't say the letter M. Too much vibration.
When your name is Pam and you lose the letter M, you are in bad shape. Living, being awake, existing in this world had become a total nightmare.
It just sounds so silly. It just sounds so silly. But it's torture. Superior canal dehiscence syndrome is torture. There's just no pretty way to make a cute analogy. It makes you want to kill yourself in the end. And if you don't get diagnosed, that's what some people do.
So on March 4th, 2011, Pam goes in for surgery. This procedure, she's convinced, will kill her.
And I went, asked the anesthesiologist to give me something for nerves, because I'm having brain surgery. And I kissed my husband goodbye, and I thought that was it. But I couldn't do any more. I said goodbye. So, imagine my surprise when I wake up from surgery. I'm awake, and the world is peaceful. It's a whole new world. It's a whole new world, and it doesn't hurt to just lay there. And I knew it worked. I said the letter M. Said it quietly. I don't know that anybody heard me, but it was just the letter M. It wasn't this vibration machine that turning my brain to mush. It was just another letter. It was amazing.